So this is for all of our authors and writers on our podcast today. We're going to talk with Kat Artemis. I met her in a book club and she shared about her book. And so I was so excited that for those of you that follow me, I actually have Kat on two of our podcasts. She's going to be on our podcast for The Fit as a Fiddle because of her topic of her book. But today she's on this particular podcast with authors, writers, and authors because, of course, she's authored a book. And so I want to talk a little bit before we get started. And I see that we have other folks coming in. I'm not sure who just came in. 14 of us now. I think I got everybody on there. If you're in the audience and you don't see your name on the screen, raise your hand. We don't want to. Oh, there's Sandy. All right, let me get her promoted up here. Now I think we have everybody. Sandy's going to be rejoining. There she is. Okay. So anyway, I want to talk a little bit about. Oh, Ezra, we see you. Yes, we see you on the screen. You're there. Yes, good. And let's see, Ezra. Yes, you can unmute if you want to say something later. But we're going to start talking with Kat at the moment. So anyway, the first thing we want to talk about is in this particular topic today, it is titling your manuscript. And Kat has chosen such a great title for hers. And so I'm going to share my screen briefly. And we have folks coming in. If you're in the audience, just hang in there. I'll get back to you once we start talking to Kat. But I'm going to share my screen for a moment. And once I do that, I can't see everyone. But bear with me. This is where everything is found. So I just kind of want to show everyone that's on the call. When you come into either the Kathy Benner International Academy or just kathybenner.com, you'll see that here on the homepage. Both of those URLs bring you right to this homepage. And when you scroll over to the More button and let it drop down, here is the authors and writers. Here's where we are today. And when you come to the authors and writers, here's where you find all of our replays. Now, when you start to go to kathybenner.com or Kathy Benner International Academy, again, both of those URLs take you to this homepage. The platform will ask you to sign up for a Teachable account, but it's free. And it's just is going to ask you your email and you can put a password if you want to. You don't have to. And then it's just a free account. And then you can go in and you can tap into anything that says free. And this is where all of our replays are. And then you can see here, we've had a course for authors and writers. We have a course for bloggers. And then comes down here, this is our 21 through 23 season. And this is where all of our replays. And so on a free account, you can tap into that. You can tap into all of the free blogger speakers. So you can get all of those teachings, all of those podcasts, they're all right there. So today I want to actually click into the course, and I already have it opened up here. And so when you open up the course, our topic today is titling the manuscript. Now, when you look over here, you can see where we have all kinds of topics. It was choosing your publishing route, editing your writing, getting feedback from editors. Here is titling your manuscript. We go on through next month. We're going to talk about formatting your book and then designing an eye-catching book cover. And then writing a publisher-ready book description, and then creating a book launch plan. I just met a gal at a writer's conference this weekend, and she's going to be our speaker here for creating a book launch plan. And she's launched several books, so I'm excited to talk to her. And then publishing your book to online retailers, and then the six most effective book marketing strategies. So you can see there's a lot of material in there. And today we're talking about why do titles matter? I don't want to take up a lot of time because I want to get to Kat and talk about her book. But I am just going to cover this very quickly. The five attributes to a good book title: it has to grab your attention, it has to be memorable, informative, easy to say, and not embarrassing or problematic for someone to say it. Because if it is, they have a tendency not to talk about your book too much. So as we scroll down, I kind of want to give you a couple of examples. And this one could be a little embarrassing to say, actually. In 1982, Nora Hayden released a book called Astrological Love. It bombed. Okay. How many of you would look at that and go, what's astrological love? What does that mean? But she then took the exact same book and she changed the title, How to Satisfy a Woman Every Time and Have Her Beg for More. I think that could be a little embarrassing to talk about, but look at this. New York Times bestseller. All she did was change the title. Okay. Because it says the first and only book that tells you exactly how. So anyway, what happened was is it became a bestseller once she changed the title because it was attention grabbing, it was memorable, it was informative. I think still might be a little embarrassing to say depending on what audience you're in. And it was still short enough that people could remember the title. Now, here is what number one best-selling author Tim Ferriss says about titles. In the 4-hour work week, he got all kinds of publicity over his book, which to him, he was fine with. It didn't matter. I mean, even Jay Leno parodied his book on air, and he said that that was really great because it brought a lot of attention to the publication. And so it was definitely memorable and searchable. Okay, so often the title is all the buyer ever gets to see. That's all they ever get to see. So if a friend says, oh, it was good, what was the name of it? And they're like, oh, I don't know. Let me see if I can find it. You want something that they're going to remember, that it can be short enough, or at least the subject matter can be remembered. So it has to be informative. You have to give an idea of what the book is about. And I'm going to share Kat's book title here in a moment, and it'll certainly make sense what we're talking about today. So anyway, make it again easy, not embarrassing to say. And there's tons of stuff in this chapter, this module. Make it short, something that they can remember. And here is a perfect example. So take a look at this, at the cover of this book. So what do you think? Here, why some ideas survive and others die, made to stick. How about entrepreneurship calls for eager millennials? Which one? You see what happened is once they made this title a lot bolder and shorter and easier to remember, same thing, this book shot off the shelf once they just changed the title. So, how to come up with a book title? Well, you have to set clarity on your book goals. A book title can sell the book to readers. It can establish the author's authority. It can be a hook for the author to get media visibility. As you see, there's all kinds of reasons that a book title is important. And again, I'm not going to read through the module. You can tap into kathybinner.com or to the International Academy and find all of this material here. But number two, step two, brainstorm several titles. You know, write them down, search. See, you know, is it noteworthy? You know, you can use some phrases from the book. Examples, the black swan, lecturing birds on flying. I hope they serve beer in hell. Now that's a cute title. That makes me want to pick it up and say, what's this about? So you can use both short and long phrases, use relevant keywords. And here is a great example of keywords, the 7 habits of highly effective people, powerful lessons in personal change. Mindset, the new psychology of success. Predictable revenue, turn your business into a sales machine with the 100 million best practices of Salesforce.com. So make a promise, maybe. How to win friends and influence people. That's kind of a promise. Getting things done. You know, hey, if you're struggling, you might say, oh, I need that book. Think and grow rich. See, it's giving a promise. Be simple. Getting past no. I like Steve Jobs is just Steve Jobs, the power of habit. And then, of course, you have to target an audience. What to expect when you're expecting? Yeah, well, guess who that book is for? Or Physics for Future Presidents. Or you could offer a solution to a problem. Man's Search for Meaning, 6 ways to lose belly fat without exercise, Secrets of Closing the Sale. So these are all examples of a solution to a problem. And you could use numbers, the 48 laws of power, the 5 love languages, the secret to love that lasts, the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. I'm a huge fan of John Maxwell. This one's a John Maxwell book. I'm a John Maxwell team member, by the way, and this is a John Maxwell book. A great read. And so these are just some ways, you know, to put together your titles to make them, and again, there's just example after example here, and it gives you an idea of how to put something together so that your book can be remembered. Okay, so again, you can go back to the Kathy Binner International Academy. Oh, Sherry said she saw John last week. Yay! So you can go back to the Kathy Binner International Academy or just kathybinner.com and find that particular course there under authors and writers. So with that, that's a little bit about me. That's what I do. I have the Academy, and that's where I put all of our replays, and that's where I put the training modules, and you can tap into those at any time. Now, Sandy is my co-host, my co-mod, and I see you, Sandy. I'm going to actually, first of all, I'm going to go down and make you the co-host now that I see you there. And then I would like for you to share with the group what it is that you bring to the group. And please tell us about the Writer's Workshop.
Hi there. I've been an English teacher forever and ever, it felt like, and now I went professional writing. And so I've seen it from all kinds of angles, from how the grammar should look to how to persuade an audience to whatever you're doing. And somewhere along the way, starting in 2018, I became involved in a writer's workshop in Yellow Springs, Ohio, kind of hitching a wagon to a star, Antioch Writer's Workshop, that had been there for over 30 some years before it ended. And we've grown to the point that now I've got us in a big, beautiful hotel in town called the Mills Park Hotel. My theme is that every year I'll focus, it seems like I focus on one genre, but because I'm talking to a lot of different writers, and a lot of writers today are in different genres, I make sure that we do both the business side of writing, as well as the ins and outs and what do you put on the piece of paper once the story gets started. This year, I have Andrew Welsh Huggins, who is a journalist and a mystery writer out of Columbus, Ohio. And I have a Jeffrey Marks, who is the publisher for Crippen & Landrieu Publishing in Cincinnati, Ohio, a mostly short mystery fiction publishing company. And I have the Ohio Audiobook Narrators. What I ask of my featured guests, Jeffrey and Mark, is that they stick around throughout that whole weekend. So if you're seeing them on Friday night, you'll see them on Sunday and Saturday. And so if you have a question, because to me, it's all about the writer who attends. This is live, in-person information gathering. So if you're shy and you don't blurt out a question or an answer or anything like that, you will always have time to ask that question or ask for advice whenever it comes up. Jeffrey and Andrew should be available. And they're a lot alike, and that helps me too, because sometimes they will share a session together. And I like that. Some of the business things, what is the perfect query letter to an agent if you're doing traditional publishing? And Jeffrey Marks in particular is a publisher, so he has seen a lot of those and knows how to write them, knows how to critique them, knows how to answer questions about them. And nonfiction book proposals. If you've never looked up what that encounters, ooh la la, it's like doing a research paper before you even write page one. So there's a lot that goes into a nonfiction book proposal. He's going to be talking about that. Andrew Welsh Huggins, because he's a journalist, and even mystery stories need a lot of research. And you hear people talk about, so I needed to find something out about my story 4 hours later. His session is all about making research count. How do you get in there and find what you need in a relative short amount of time? So he'll be doing those panels, and there are more. By all means, go to Into the Springs, writersworkshop.com, and it's pretty much laid out. And you know how we love subscribers. On there is my list to subscribe. I don't inundate you with newsletters, but this is an active time of the year. So I have a lot about Jeffrey and Andrew and what they're doing. The other one is the Ohio Audiobook Narrators. They're out of Columbus. They're coming in for a special 3-hour session on Saturday. And anything you want to know about narrating your story, they can handle it for you. They're going to talk about what's it like if you want to do it yourself. Can you do something at home? How do you set up? There's a lot of libraries today that have something called whisper rooms, and they're built specifically for you to do your podcast and for do your own narrating. What do they do if you want them to narrate your book? What does a good narration contract look like? There's a lot of weird contracts out there for just about everything. And there have been, unfortunately, some folks who have gotten gypped, so to speak, with their contract. They could tell you what a really good one should entail. And they're going to kind of give a demo to show what they do, how they prepare. There'll be four of them. One is a British gentleman, and he's fine. He does so many different language accents in English, but he says, you know what the hardest one is? American English. He does not do an American English accent. He goes, I've tried, but he does an awful lot more. And what does that mean when they pick up your story? What's their process? It's amazing. And then I have you on stage if you want to be. On Saturday night, we have open mic reading, and you can get up, and they pushed me. It was 5 minutes, but now it's seven. 7 minutes of a story. And if you're shy, again, I'm always thinking about, I don't know, people like me who love to write stories. I'll talk in a small group, give me a classroom, but in front of 50 some people. Well, I have a couple professional actors, young gentlemen who will come by and they'll read your story for you. And even if you have no qualms about reading your own story, I'd give it to them anyway. It is fun to listen to them read. Mm-hmm. So we've got that. A new one is book sales. Usually it was just for the featured guests. But now if you're a registrant, I'm test driving this. So I can only ask for folks who have one book to sell to bring it by. And for an hour or so on a Saturday before open mic reading, you can come into the banquet room and sell your book. I invite the Yellow Springs community to come in to browse and buy. Same with listening to your story being read. So there's a 7 a.m. activity if you're one of those who likes to do writing at that time. So I try and satisfy everybody in every type of writing. The tags are cultivate your craft, grow your business community, and your business as a whole. So by all means, think about it. I'll put it somewhere in the chat there so you can get it down. It would be lovely to see you. And thanks, Kathy, for letting me chat. And thanks for showing up, too.
Wow. So now you see why Sandy's my co-host. She brings so much to the table. And if you've not been to a writer's conference or a writer's workshop, you have to try one. And this one in Yellow Springs is the perfect place to start. It is a lot of fun. And I did take my story last year, and I let one of the actors read my story. And it is fun to hear somebody else reading your story. Now, I do want to say we've got, 16 of us on the call today, and some of you may already be published. Some of you may just say, well, someday I want to write. Someday I'm going to write. And let me just share with you this one little bit of inspiration. You cannot have a book without a manuscript, but you can have a manuscript without a book. So go ahead and write your manuscript. It doesn't hurt to write it. Go ahead and write it. Go ahead and start. It can be messy. It can have mistakes and errors. It can be all that. And you don't have to publish that. But you're never going to publish something if you don't start with a manuscript. So at least write your manuscript. At least you'll have that much of it down in writing. And one of the things that I like to do is I like to go to my Google Docs and open up a brand new document, click on the little microphone on my phone keyboard. And when I get my 5K walk-in every day, I can simply spin a little tale right there into my Google Docs. Now, it's a very rough draft, but you know what? Debbie's going to laugh at this one. Who was it that we, when we were in a seminar, Debbie, and I can't remember his name. And he got up, it was one of Carrie's conferences, and he got up and he said, "My crappy book is better than your notebook."
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
So just start, get a manuscript. And even if you don't think it's all that, it's okay. It's okay. At least you have something in writing and you've gotten started. So my crappy little inserts that I'm making in my Google Docs, that's better than your no inserts that you're not doing at all. So get started. Okay. So that's my inspiration for you today. I want to talk with Kat. I, again, like I said before, I met her on a book club, and everyone in the book club read her book. And it's very, very good. And then we had the opportunity to actually meet her and talk with her. And Kat Artemis has a book called Unlock the Power Within You and Transform Your Life with a New Way to Think About Thinking. In this captivating book, author Kat Artemis teaches you exactly how she overcame decades of depression, anxiety, and negative thinking, and how you can do it too. So now you can see why I want her on our Fit as a Fiddle podcast, our health and wellness podcast, as well as on this one with authors and publishers and writers. And so, Kat, tell us a little bit about your personal journey and what actually led you to write A New Way to Think About Thinking.
Yes. Oh my gosh. This has already been so much fun. I already took like a page of notes while I was learning from both you and Sandy. Thank you so much for having me here. And so writing my book has, besides motherhood, I think it's my greatest achievement because it is hard. It is hard work to sit down and put pen to paper and allow yourself to fail every single day because you're going to write stuff that you hate and then you have to redo it like a million times to get it in a good spot. So I really appreciate this conversation. So my personal journey, as you said, I struggled with negative thinking, depression, lots of anxiety for about 2.5 decades of my life. And
Wow.
it went on until my mid 30s, and it started in middle school. And so when I finally began to heal my mindset after trying, different modalities to try to heal myself, medication, various things, therapies, I found that when I finally became more healed. I don't know that I'm ever going to be fully healed, but when I finally got my mindset where I wanted it, what I realized is that I wanted to give that back to others and I wanted to give people the book I didn't have. So I had to learn in lots of different books. When I decided to take responsibility for my mindset, I read books on mindset, spirituality, and the law of attraction, and I immersed myself in it day in and day out. Now it's been 18 years since I started this journey. And I just really wanted to give people a book that doesn't have a bunch of fluff, that is a personal story by somebody who's a normal, average, everyday, I'm just a middle of the road person. And I just feel like if I can do it, I can be relatable and I can give people a roadmap or a framework to do what they need to do to get their mindset in a more positive direction. And that's really why I wrote it. I wrote the book I wish I would have had that I didn't have.
But what was it that actually inspired you when you said, "Gee, I need to put this book out there"? I mean, what was your thought process for, especially for a lot of the audience that hasn't written anything? Again, you haven't even written that manuscript yet. You haven't even made any, Google Docs yet of your writing. What inspired you and said, I think I can do this"?
So the biggest thing that inspires me, like my why every day, is because I want every single person to know that your mindset creates your life. And for me, my healing wasn't enough. I just thought, one day I just woke up and I thought, if I can't share this, then what's the good?
of all of this healing in my life. If I die, you know, with all of this information that I've learned over the last 18 years, if I just go away without ever sharing it, I'm not sure that my healing was worth it. And so for me, I'm inspired every day to have these conversations. I'm pretty introverted, actually. So they're hard for me, but it's to overcome that and come on podcasts like this and have go to speaking engagements. It's all because I really, really want people to know that you can change your life by how you think. And that to me is, I had to put pen to paper. And I just kept doing it over and over and over until I got it in a good spot. And it took me several years.
Well, thank you for hanging in there, because it's a great read, a new way to think about thinking. So everybody make a note of that. It's on Amazon. Am I correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
It's on Amazon.
Yep. And we'll share that before it's over. That's what the cover looks like right there. A new way to think about thinking. Okay. You see what a great title she has. It definitely tells you what the book is about. Now, in your book, you mentioned the importance of how rather than what when it comes to transforming your life. Elaborate on that for us.
Yes. So this is a big concept that I really tried to boil down into something that's really manageable. So what I mean by that is it's never what we're thinking about that's causing us, it's never the what that causes us pain. It's always how we think about the thing that causes us pain. So from the time we're really little, for our whole lives, everything we come in contact with, we naturally decide this is good or bad. It feels good or it feels bad. And a lot of times we create these toxic, bad feeling thoughts when we're really young, and we never stop to ask ourselves, is this really how I want to be thinking about this? So here's an example. I actually just told this story this weekend. So when I said this earlier, motherhood was a big deal for me. I've been a mother since 1998 and I loved every minute of it. So last year, my daughter, my youngest, decided to up and move away 2.5 hours to go to law school. And I was really happy for her, but I was honestly, like, on the inside, I was crushed. I was crushed. I felt like motherhood was ending. And that was it for me. It was like a gift that was given to me that was suddenly taken away. And I was really struggling with it. So the day we moved her, I was sitting in my car and I was waiting for them to get in the U-Haul. And I looked in the rearview mirror and I was like wiping my tears. And I had that thought of that you hear all the time, like, there's a reason why the rearview mirror is small, because you're not going that way. And there's a reason why the windshield is big, because what's out in front of you is most important. And right in that moment, I was like, I'm not losing anything. I'm gaining my freedom. And as soon as I thought of that, and I realized, like, you can't lose motherhood. Like, it's just transforming. And so in that moment, I changed how I was thinking about that. The situation didn't change. She's still leaving me. Everything stays the same. My kids are grown and gone. But what changed was how I was thinking about it. So for me, it's not the what, but how we choose to think about things that's most important.
Wow, that's powerful, Kat. I'm going to have to practice that more. I have never actually heard it said exactly like that, and it makes so much sense. Can you discuss some of the specific techniques or strategies that you use to overcome negative thinking and to cultivate that inner happiness that we're all trying to achieve?
Yes. I just got this warm, fuzzy feeling in my stomach when you said that, because so my book is a 10-step book. It's a framework, but one of the foundational steps of the book that I want to always shout from the rooftops is learning how to become present in your life. So I have ADHD all day long and have struggled with it my whole life. So I get when somebody says to me, I can't do it. I can't do it. I have too many thoughts. My thoughts are like spaghetti. And what I say to people is, first of all, as adults, we don't like doing stuff we're not good at. So it's really easy to quit trying. So when I say you have to get present, you have to kind of put aside the fact that it's hard, because it gets easier. But here's why the present is so important. the present moment is the only real, true moment in time when you think about it. So the past is no longer here and it's not real, even though our thoughts make it real, and our future is no longer here and it's not real. So the only place we are ever creating from, creating our thoughts from, creating from, is the present moment. And if you can find that space to get in between the past and the future, that feels so peaceful. Like, imagine thinking, I don't have the past, you know, traumatizing me right now, and I don't have this anxiety about what's going to happen. You can, that's a place where you can take a breath. So there's a couple of things that I learned how to do very early on. And this, it's two very quick things. I have a whole chapter on it to teach you, but there are two things I can tell you now, techniques that, you know, really worked well for me. So visualization is important. And I don't usually suggest people try to go directly from nothing to trying to meditate. There is room in between to learn how to become present. So one is sitting quietly. You have to find a quiet place, sit with your palms up on your knees, take some deep breaths. And instead of trying to think about nothing, which is what meditators tell you to do, which you can get to, I want you to think about how the palms of your hands feel. And I know that sounds weird, but as soon as you close your eyes and you breathe and you feel like, are they itching? Or are they tingling? For some reason, you can feel it. That you're getting yourself right then into the present moment. Mm-hmm. And then I want you to do that with your feet and with your legs and all the way through and with your breath. And it's just a matter of taking that time. And it is so calming when you do that. That gets you into the present moment, and very easily think about how the room smells. Think about, you know, the different colors. Just allow yourself to focus on one thing. It's kind of like if you love to play sports, or if you do something like writing, like I can write all day long, I'm in the present moment. So it's a matter of just sitting quietly and feeling that energy. And then the other thing I tell people to do, a quick technique that gets you, helps you get into the present moment, is we give our energy out all day long to lots of different things. We are all, it's like taking a really long cord and plugging it in. So I might plug it into some past memories that hurt me and that follow me around every day that I'm not even thinking of. I might plug it into something that I'm afraid of or that I'm nervous about. So the technique is to sit down, sit quietly, allow yourself to feel, like get into the present moment by thinking about how you feel, what you smell, how your hands feel. And then after 5 minutes or so, I want you to visualize unplugging those cords from everything that's bothering you and allow those cords to come right back into you. And it is so weird how a simple visualization like that can actually bring you into the present moment and give you that space to breathe for a minute. And so those are two of the techniques that I say, and getting present is key. It's key to finding your way into transforming your thoughts. You have to get out of the past and out of the future.
Okay, now how many of us actually set aside a time every day to get grounded? Yes, several of us. I know I do. Yep, I do. Absolutely. Yes. Faith, do you have a question?
I actually wanted to say I relate to what Kat is saying because I deal with that myself. And I was going to say I struggle with the negative thinking and the regulating my emotions, and I get what you're saying 100%.
Thank you for that, Faith. Yes, I appreciate that. Kat, I want to ask you, you know, we do have those past experiences, and often it's a key step in personal transformation. How do you approach that process? Mm-hmm. And what advice do you have for others navigating those feelings, because sometimes they kind of haunt us? So what do you do with that?
Absolutely. That was a really important chapter that I wrote in my book, because first of all, our past is the source of our current perception of reality. We bring everything from our past forward. And I know this particularly because I had a really traumatic childhood. And I had a lot of harsh, really bad experiences with alcoholic family members and violence and things like that. And so it took me years, all the way into adulthood, well into my 30s, to really make peace with some of that, because it follows you and it feels like it's happening right now. And the reason why it hurts so bad is because the emotion that we felt when the thing originally happened to us is what we feel every time we pull that memory up. And so every time, you know, we're thinking about our past, we are constantly, we actually are like re-injuring ourselves at that point over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard. So as an adult, what I did, and this was so powerful for me, is I picked like one powerful memory at a time that was traumatic. And then from the place where I am today, I would deal with that memory. So here's what I mean. A lot of times when we think of traumatic memories, we are thinking and feeling of them as if we are that age still. We feel powerless. All of that comes forward in our minds. I'm still powerless. This is happening to me. And so what I decided to do was, once I got present, once I got quiet, like we just talked about, then I would unplug from everything. And then I would visualize me today as a strong, independent woman who can take care of herself. And I would go back in my mind and I would go to my child, me as a child, and I would console her. I would tell her she was safe, and I would handle the situation from my perspective today. And not every memory can be healed that quickly by doing that one time. But if I can heal some of the most violent things I've seen by doing that over and over and over again, over the course of time, you don't get rid of the memory. The memory is always going to be there. But what you do get rid of is that negative, horrible emotion or feeling that's attached to the memory. So now I can talk all day long about the things that happened to me. I've found forgiveness and all of that kind of stuff, because I was able to detach the emotion, but still allow the thing that happened. I can't fix it, but I can reduce the emotion that is attached to it. And that's one of the ways that I go about doing that.
So now that you've worked through a lot of that and you talk about positive thinking and gratitude, how do you put that into practice every day on a much happier note? How do you turn that around in your world?
Yeah, absolutely. I have this course that I'm building based on a talk that I'm giving here at the end of the month in Denver. And I'm giving a talk on how to transform your life in the midst of change. And the course that I'm building to go with it is called Spiral Up. And the S in Spiral Up stands
okay,
for—
Okay, title again, everybody pay attention. How about that title, Spiral Up? Doesn't that—
Spiral Up.
That makes you want to lean in. Yes,
yes.
Thank you.
I mean, if you're like me, like I'm a catastrophic thinker. So as soon as change hits my life, a change is going to sweep me off my feet, you know, and just like when I was talking about with my daughter. So I have to find ways, frameworks for my own mindset, and Spiral Up is how I do it. And so the S in Spiral Up stands for sprinkle everything with love and gratitude. And what I mean by that is not just the good, but the bad too. And if negative thoughts, negative emotions cannot also live in your mind at the same time as positive thoughts and positive emotions, like it's one or the other. So the next time you get mad and or angry or frustrated at something and you're like, okay, I got to switch to positive, it's not that easy. So there's a trick. And the trick is, instead of just trying to conjure up love, like, okay, how do I feel love like really fast? You know, how do I get thankful really fast? I want you to think about appreciation. What do you appreciate? Because appreciation is like love and gratitude mixed together. So if you need something fast and you think, okay, I really appreciate this thing today. And it can be anything you want. Something you, when you feel appreciation, it's something that you feel kind of like in your mid, you know, your solar plexus area, and it kind of just comes up from you. And so The reason why this is important is because love and gratitude or appreciation are like, it's kind of like money. So when you invest money, you get that compounded interest, and every day you get a teeny bit more. So when you bring love and gratitude into your life, more often than not, it does not have to be perfect. You are compounding interest. So when you do have a bad day, instead of having a bad day that's going to spiral you down for a month, maybe it's going to spiral you down for an hour. And then that love and gratitude just kind of like flows back in, just like a wave comes right up on the beach. And so that's why love and gratitude are so important. Having those emotions as often as you can in your life.
Wow, Kat, this is amazing. Great speaker, everybody. Yes, yes, she is very good at presenting her material. And you see where she took, as an author, she simply took her life and she pulled out the best parts and pieces and was inspired to share that with all of us as her readers and as her listeners. So I want to talk a little bit about the writing process. When you finally made the decision, you said, okay, I'm gonna write this down. I'm gonna write this book. And of course, like I said before, it started with the manuscript before she turned it into a book. Mm-hmm. When did you have time to write with your crazy busy schedule?
Oh my gosh, I love this question because here's why. I used to be a night owl. I love, love, love staying up late. I always have. I could stay up till 2 a.m, no problem. But the problem is that I really can't write at like midnight. Like my brain doesn't work at midnight. I just like staying up. So I had to change my habits. And I think you actually had the power of habit
on the list. Yeah.
On the list. And as soon as I saw that, I laughed to myself because that book was big for me. I listened to it every day. So anyway, point being, I realized that the way I was going to be successful at doing this was that I had to actually start with my habits so I could get up early and write my book, because even though I like staying up late at night, my brain isn't turned on. And so I had to start with, what habits do I need to change? And so I started working on that. And eventually I learned how to become a morning person. And now I'm like a great morning person. This was back in 2015, 2016. I mean, it took a while, you know, over time to get that. But then once I did, I work a full-time job currently, and it's very demanding. So what I decided to do was I committed to writing every morning. I do not write at night. And when I write in the morning, I'll write 1 to 2 hours, usually from like 5 to 7. And I know it's early, believe me. If you would have told me all those years ago I'd be writing that early, I would have said there's no chance that will ever happen in this lifetime. But I wanted it more than I didn't want it.
Right.
And I also gave up time on the weekends so that I could write. So I would get up super early on a Saturday and I would just say, I'm not doing anything until, you know, 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I'm going to write for 8 hours. And there are times when I could write a paragraph, and there are times when I could write 3 pages, you know, really like, I always just think of like, if creativity decides to show up that day and sit on my shoulder, I can do it. And if it doesn't, then I'm just going to sit at my computer and struggle, but I don't have my phone with me. You know, I just say, I'm either going to sit here or I'm going to sit here and hammer something out. And I give myself permission to write stuff I don't like. And I know I'm going to redo it anyway.
Now, did you find, and I did, so I'm going to ask you this question, because I don't know if this is universal or if this was just me. Did you find that once you put aside time to write, that writing started to become a little easier?
Absolutely, it does. Yes.
Okay.
When you commit, that makes all the difference. And that was for me, like, I just thought, even if it's every morning, you know, I do a lot before I start working. I try to, it's like having a part-time job before my full-time job starts. But I 100% agree that when you commit and you show up every day, I think of it, I'm very like spiritual, and, you know, I always just think then, you know, my spirit guide on the other side is going to know when to show up. You know what I mean? Like, creativity is going to know when to show up if you show up consistently. Like, you know, if you know when your friend's going to be there, you're going to show up.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Does anybody else put it in the chat? Does anybody else have a consistent time that they like to write. I'm with Kat. I'm a morning person. I've always been a morning person, but for those of you that know me, I did 25 years owning beauty salons. Mm-hmm. And so none of my customers came until after they got off work. And so I ended up, you know, working in, you know, till late. And so once I retired, I took that as an opportunity to get my schedule flipped back over to my preference, which is being a morning person. And I do write first thing in the morning as well. I love that. I like to get up before Mark gets up. And then, you know, around 9 o'clock, we can sit and have our coffee together. And then he gets on with his day and I can get on with my day, but I already have my writing time done by then. So I do enjoy that as well. Anyone else? I don't see anybody in the chat. Tell us, when's your favorite writing time? We've got some authors in the group. Sandy, tell us, and Debbie's writing. I know Ruth has published a book. Sherry's published a couple of books. Anyone else have some books? What was your favorite writing time? Let us know what your favorite writing time was. Faith, all day. She likes to just, do you just write when the inspiration hits you? Is that how you function in your writing?
To be honest, when I write, I just write emotional stuff and personal stuff.
Okay.
So I write whenever it strikes and the inspiration strikes me.
Okay, to be honest, I love
like what you said, because I'm more poetry. So whenever, but I'm working on a novel right now. So.
But that way you get the emotion in there because you're feeling it right then.
Yeah, so I'm feeling
the emotion right in the writing. Yeah. I love that. Sherry says that Jen Porter and she wrote together on Saturday. So I like that. Christine, mid to late afternoon. Yeah, Christine, mid to late afternoon. So you must have a little bit different schedule than some of us. And Christine just started writing a book. So yay, Christine. She's getting it down. She's getting it started. I love it. So you just got to start. Yeah, I love all that. So what happens, you know, when you're writing, are you, Kat, are you a writer where you can let it flow and then go back, or as many of us are guilty, I know I was early on, I'm trying to change that, but early on, I would type something and then I would go, oh, I don't think I spelled that right. Let me look up that spelling. And next thing you know, I'm editing in the middle of my writing. Yeah, anybody do that? Boy, oh boy, does that kind of slow you down. How did you get started? Did you always have a knack to just let it flow, or were you kind of editing as you wrote when you first started, Kat?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think when I first started, I would edit when I wrote, but then what I found was that built resistance. So then every time I sat down to write, I would feel resistant to all the things I was going to do wrong. And then I just felt like it was never going to work. And so then I decided to change my mindset to say, how about if I just get out an end-to-end manuscript and just to know that I did it. And I mean, I would occasionally, if I was tired and couldn't come up with something good to write, I would go back and fix a few things like that, you know, but it took me a good while, like you said, Kathy, to learn it's better to get it all out. And I felt so good in 2018 was the first time I wrote an end-to-end copy. And I can tell you that from then till I finally published it, I probably rewrote it many more times, but it was such a great starting point. And the one thing I did know when I started my book was I had a vision of how I wanted it structured. I knew specifically I was going to have 4 sections to every chapter because I am very like no fluff, like that I need a roadmap and I want 1, 2, 3, 4. And I just want to know exactly what to do. So I knew that I wanted to do that, but the writing itself, I didn't want to resist it. So I put aside the judgments.
Okay. Linda says morning is better for her. She says, although she does capture ideas throughout the day. Linda, how do you capture your ideas? Do you have something you do electronically or just good old pen and paper?
Mostly I use Evernote so I can capture them and then tag them and put them so that they're retrievable and searchable. But also the odd scrap of paper and post-it notes are critical as well.
I get it. I get it.
Yes,
Judy says, totally. Judy says, as the spirit moves her, preferably with coffee. Judy, I'm right there with you. I love that. Oh, yeah. Sylvia says she edits as she writes, but she said it does slow her down. But then some of the editing has been done already. So then she feels maybe that she's gained some territory at the other end. She doesn't have as much editing to do. So I love that. Kat, are you a plotter? You indicated that you had to have, you know, the 4 points and the chapters. Did you plot the whole book first?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Okay. Now,
I actually did.
Tell us how you did that. What are the tools of your trade to plot out your book? Did you just old fashioned pencil and paper?
Yeah, it was old fashioned. So I'm a business analyst by trade at work.
You have that analytical mind.
Yeah, the details. And so what I decided to do was, it was less overwhelming for me if I had just an outline. Now I don't write. Although I do have a fiction book that's going to go with this book, but it's only halfway done. But my book that I published, I did an outline and I knew, like I said, the way it was going to be structured, and that helped me. It helped guide me and it felt less overwhelming because I had that outline and I had that structure. And again, it changed multiple times, but to get started and do the first end-to-end copy, having that general outline and knowing a little bit of the subject matter each time. I knew the 10 steps were actually, they didn't start out as 10 steps, they were like 20. And then I called them principles instead of steps. But when I wrote that end-to-end copy, it became very, I'm looking at my wall because I have sticky notes. I have 10 sticky notes and they've been on my wall since 2018 because that is when I wrote the end-to-end. And when I got done, I was like, oh my God, this is actually 10 steps and they build on each other. And that's kind of like doing that whole end-to-end process and just following that outline is what got me to, you know, it just helped me refine and refine and refine each time.
I love that. Christine says she uses the Trello app to make list of ideas, but then she writes in her Google Docs app. And she said she gets ideas for her book from listening to podcasts on the topic. So yes, that's all great information.
I have this board. This is how I operate.
See?
So I'm like the sticky note queen. So yes, I
love it.
Visually see everything and put them into rows and columns. And it makes me happy and it makes me feel safe, I think.
I like that. Now, the only difference between myself and Kat, now I started the way Kat is, and I now have my cork board here on the wall behind my computer and I can see it, but I no longer plot out my writing on the cork board because, as many of you know, Mark and I, we're trying to travel more and more. We're trying to be retired. Yeah, I don't know that I'll ever be retired, but we're trying to be retired. Sandy's like, no, you're not retired. Anyway, I did switch, just like Christine, over to Trello because it's kind of an electronic bulletin board like that. And you can make all of these little cards and then you can click on them with your mouse and you can scoot them from list to list and move them all around on your Trello board. And so anyway, it's just another tool. If you're interested, Sherry, she uses Plotter, Plotter, Plotter. And it's kind of similar. Christine says she never knows when an idea is going to strike. She said, what if she's not home? That way she has the app even on her phone. And I get that, Christine, I'm right there with you. I do the same thing. I have it right there. And when we travel, I can pretty much run everything that I'm doing from my cell phone. Now, I prefer to have my laptop or my tablet with me, but if I don't, I can get by with just my cell phone. So I love that. Now, Kat, back to your book again. And we're at the top of the hour. So I want to ask you, what do you want readers to take away from the book? What is your overarching message, if you could generalize it? What do you want all your readers to have as a takeaway?
Yes. So I was at an author fair this weekend and everybody that came to my table, I said, I teach people how to think thoughts that are for you instead of against you. I want you to know how to think thoughts that where if you can get your mindset together, you not only will heal your past, but you really can manifest an amazing life. And everything, all the steps in my book lead you to manifesting what you really want. And I know a lot of people say, you know, that manifesting is mamby-pamby, but it really does. Like, I have changed my entire, my life looks entirely different because I learned how to think thoughts that were for me instead of thoughts that sabotaged me. And so I want everyone to know that this isn't something that only the top 10% of people can do. Like, this really is something anyone can do. We all can do it. And it's you don't have to change anything that you're doing. You just do something new. And the new way to think about thinking, not like, don't work on changing, but work on just adding something new. And it will change your life. And so that's what I always tell people.
Kat, that is beautiful. Thank you so much. So, a new way to think about thinking. Get the book, follow the 10 steps. I think it's a great read. Again, we did it in our book club. That's where I met Kat. I'm so happy that you're with us today, Kat. Thank you so much. And again, we'll have a whole different audience. Well, some of us might be the same, but we'll have a whole different audience on the other podcast, the Fit as a Fiddle, which is the health and wellness podcast. Mm-hmm. And again, this one is all about new authors, which is why we did the little segue there about writing, which we probably won't do on the other podcast. But thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, your work with us. And yeah. I love it. So any last questions for Kat before we go today? Now, don't forget, this is being recorded, and I will put this in the Academy. You can find it as kathybinner.com. You can see my name right here, my little Hollywood square. Just kathybinner.com will get you to the homepage, and you will need to register for a Teachable account, but it is free, and you can get into the recording, and we'll have all the links there on how you can get in touch with Kat as well and how to get the book. Any comments or questions before we go?
Yep.
Sandy.
Yeah. What's coming up? You mentioned fiction. Is this the first time going toward fiction? And are you approaching it from a different way than your current book?
Yeah. When you asked me that, I got so many like excited feelings in my stomach. So I've always written stuff, but I started this fiction book when I was 28. So a long time ago, I'm 54. So here's the thing. This fiction book, I couldn't finish the second half because it's about a woman going through a journey, pretty much where I was at 28, but it's fiction. She was going through a divorce. She felt invisible. She can't find herself. And I couldn't figure out how to bring her back up. And then it occurred to me after I wrote this book that what I want to do is to take my steps in this book and put them in a fictionalized story so that I can show women like really how you can do this, but in a story that is powerful, you know? And so that's what's next. And I love the writing process. I didn't love it at first, but I love it now. And I'm excited to get back to it. It's more of a comfort zone than
good.
Probably promoting, but I'm learning promoting.
Yeah.
No, I get it. My computer, my laptop, that's my happy place. Whenever I sit down behind my laptop and I know I get to have a morning of writing, it just makes my shoulders drop. And I was like, this is my me time, you know?
Yeah,
so absolutely. Yes, I enjoy that as well. Judy wants to know, what is the title of your, do you have a title for the
of
fiction?
The one that I'm working on?
Mm-hmm, or the fiction.
It's called Thoughts from the Average. That's what it's always been. I don't know if that's what it's going to stay.
Okay.
I've always just called it that because it was really about this average everyday woman who, like so many of us, don't know who we are. And we go through these phases of life. And some people, you know, I definitely was there in my 30s and early 40s where you're just a little lost and on that hamster wheel. And, you know, we create lives based on what we think we're supposed to do. But then we get to a certain age and we're like, what? I don't have any purpose. I'm on this hamster wheel and it won't stop. And what do I do? And this woman in this book is going through a change through her, you know, in her life, but she's just a very normal everyday person. And so that's what it started at. I don't know what it will be called when I finally.
Well, Judy said she likes it already.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I love that.
I gave it to my daughter, and my daughter is super into writing. She would have loved this conversation. And she, obviously I wrote it before she was born. And so she found it to be so powerful. And it meant a lot to me because she's so critical, like not of me, but she's in law school. She's super analytical of things. And I was just like, wow, like, I think I have something here. You know, I think if she's a big reader, bigger reader than me, and she liked it. And I just feel like, showing how you can live this book in a fictional way, like as an example, and I know we're at time, but as an example, like when I say, you know, when we talk about love and gratitude, I always say in my book, just do it 60% of the time. And because 40% of the time you're going to be angry about something or unhappy, or something's going to like bother you. And so I'd love to be able to show creatively that it's okay to be on this path and still yell at the person that pulls out in front of you on the road, that you're not always going to be so enlightened, but it's okay to still to be on that path. And I want to be able to show like this average everyday person going through this journey.
I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. Judy's finishing a book like yours, and it's called Confidence Game.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
love
that's a great title. Yes, we were talking about titles today. That is also a great title. I love it.
I would buy that for sure.
Yes.
Well, there's a new book called Worthy. Have you seen that book? It's called Worth. And when I saw the title of it, I got the Audible book like that. I was like, okay, that's all. We'll listen to it. And the Confidence Game, like that is one of those things where I would just be like, yes, I'm going to need that in my life. So I love that.
I love it. I love it. I'm getting a call here, so I'm just sending a little message. There. Any other questions for Kat before we go? Debbie.
Kat, a couple weekends ago, I was watching John Maxwell's conference online, and the author of Worthy was one of the speakers, and she was amazing. I mean, I'm waiting for my book to come.
It's such a good book. Yeah.
It is. Like Kathy's talking about, there's so much power in the one word.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I agree. Confidence Game, again, is going to be a good book.
So good.
And so just on a side note, Kat, one of my favorite movies by Disney is called Artemis Fowl. I don't. And when I saw that, I go, no, it's just a coincidence.
Well, so when I was in my late 20s, I had this thing where I really didn't want, this should have been like an indicator that I should have been married, but I didn't really want my husband's name and I didn't really want my dad's name. And I never really understood why I had to have somebody else's name. So I unofficially adopted Artemis after the goddess Artemis, because she really is like incredible. Like, I mean, she has her downside, but she's like kind of a badass. You know what I like? She was just like, and I really wanted that power and I didn't feel powerful at that age. And so I kind of adopted it. It was on my email. Like I always just used it. And then after 25 years together and 21 years married, we got divorced and I didn't want to take my dad's name back. So I changed it legally to Artemis. And I was just like, yeah, I'm getting my own name. I'm going to be my own girl. So yeah, anytime somebody brings up Artemis, I'm like, yes, I love that name. Goddess Artemis is amazing.
That's a great story right there. I love it.
It is. I totally agree. And I think, and I like the fact that by using Artemis, you took your power back from
the men,
everything else.
Yes. Absolutely. It's a very powerful thing. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Now, Ezra says that Ezra wants to hopefully be a writer someday, but it does seem rather intimidating. Ezra has so many outlets and genres in what they want to do. It says, I'm an evolving as a poet from 30 years, but feel I have a long way to go. I really want to blog and write fiction and have the ideas for different stories. So Ezra, hang in there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You'll make it happen.
I think the thing about that, Ezra, is a lot of times I think writers are so creative that it's hard to take the monster of creativity and then pull it into something that actually becomes this thing that you're producing. And so what I would say is pick one thing that you want to do and then just do it. And a lot of the other stuff will for a time have to fade into the background. Like my laundry faded in the background for probably 6 months, but like you have to like let some stuff fade when you're working on this. And I think that's the thing about creative people. It's like you have all the creativity, but now you've got to pull it. And that Trello board, I've used certain boards like that in my work actually, and they are really helpful for exactly, I think what you're going through is you can put all your projects on there, but advance the one you want to work on and then just really just focus on that and give yourself grace for not doing anything else.
Good advice. Yes. I love that. Kat, thank you again for being here. Sandy, yeah, thank you for being on as my co-host, and and for Linda and Ruth had to jump off, but thank you for stepping in and being my co-host while Sandy was getting signed on. And I appreciate everyone else being on the call, Debbie and Faith and Sherry, Ezra, Sylvia, Elise, Judy, Christine. Thank you so much for being with us, and check out the replay at kathybinner.com, and we will see everyone next month. And don't forget, same link that you signed up for this particular call, you can tap in every Monday at noon. It's a different topic, but it's the exact same Zoom code, and you'll be able to catch Kat again, although the health and wellness one I think is at a 4 o'clock time slot. But if you go to kathybinner.com, you'll see the calendar and tap in, and we'll get to talk to her again. So with that said, we'll see everyone next time, and have a great time. Judy, are you wanting to know my email? Just go to kathybinner.com, Judy, and you'll see there's a whole contact link clear at the bottom of the page, and you can contact me there if you want to contact me. So everybody, don't forget your glasses today if you're going to go see the eclipse, and we'll see everyone next time.
Yep. Take care. Stay well.
Thank you.
Bye.